Steve Bailey killing it as always with the music. 16 minutes after 5 o'clock, it's Bullseye on the Afternoon here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM coming your way from the Indian Spring Training Facility here in Goodyear, Arizona. Andy Bolbarch with you. Steve Bailey back at Studio Control. He's playing the theme of the Ultimate Warrior, and that accurately describes our very next guest. He was under the weather on Monday, wasn't able to join us, but because he is an Ultimate Warrior, he is in studio right now, ready to knock out our latest installment of the Local Beat, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. He's Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram. Dave, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm doing good, Bull. I always wanted to be in the WWF, which is what it was called when I was a kid. So that was if that dates me, you can probably figure out how old I am now. So.
Well, that would make you a star in the ring. And speaking of rings, they've got plenty down at Vandermark Jewelers. Stop by and see them. They're on Broad Street, right across from the hospital in Elyria. See Jim and Bob and the entire gang down at Vandermark. Vandermark Jewelers is a trusted name in jewelry, and if you stop by, you'll see why. As always, a busy week for you since our last conversation. You've been hard after it, and I know last week a lot of news was made by Oberlin College for a wide variety of different reasons, but it was a fascinating article you put together towards the end of last week talking about not necessarily just Oberlin, but many just like it that are facing big financial challenges. So you had some pretty interesting numbers that you put in that article. What were some of your major takeaways in putting all of that together?
Well, first, let me say the transition there, Bull, from ring to ring, beautiful. Just incredible.
Solid gold, right?
I am in awe. Absolutely solid gold.
Solid gold. Another one. Drops a pun on top of a pun.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he did. Wow. Okay, now I'm really in awe. but getting to the issue at hand, Oberlin College has announced that it has plans to outsource, a lot of its custodial and dining services. This is unfortunately a news story that we came across, and it's one of those things that's going to affect up to 108 employees. Maybe if Oberlin goes through with this project, they're going to be able to sort of re-job, rehouse, some of those employees in other places on campus, or with whatever vendor services come in to take over. But this is not, Oberlin College is not the only one that's suffering financially. As a private institution with, 3,000 students, let's say, they also have about 1,000 employees. So they have a 3-to-1 student to employee ratio. Financially, that's not really viable. And this is just sort of a trend. Oberlin's looking to save about $2 million a year by making this move. And the move is not finalized yet. Students, employees have kind of been up in arms about it, protesting, over the past week. We may see this change as early as, June 30th, July 1st. They're union employees. And again, this is kind of one of those cost-cutting measures that Oberlin says it needs to take to remain a viable higher educational institution. Multiple small liberal arts colleges, especially in New England, some in Ohio, some elsewhere throughout the country, have taken these kinds of steps to kind of reduce their budgets, basically. And part of that is then therefore due to back in 2008, if everybody remembers, the start of the Great Recession and when things were really kind of terrible with the housing bubble bursting, people who were thinking about having kids back then maybe weren't able to save up as much for college. Like if you had a child on January 1st of that year, and then all of a sudden, your house isn't worth what it was worth, you can't take out these loans. You decide not to take out loans. You decide not to go after some of that money. So when those children who were born in 2008 are then 18 in 2026, that's when you're really going to see the bottom fall out of, for a lot of these colleges, because students just won't have enough money. Won't have enough money saved to go to someplace like Oberlin, where, yeah, it costs about $60,000 to attend each year. But you get on average about half of that paid through financial aid, grants, loans, Pell Grants, that kind of thing. Or just simply by the college saying, hey, we'll give you X amount of dollars every year to come here because we want you as a student. So that's part of the issue, is that you know, also the population is just aging. There are fewer children being born. There are fewer college age youth. Some are going more into the trades, or they're deferring college for a year or 2 years. You know, getting a job, getting a car, finding a house, finding an apartment, and just not going to school, or going as kind of a non-traditional student, you know, you might call it, where they work, you know, 40 hours a week, and then they take a couple classes at night. Oberlin doesn't really have much of an offering kind of like that. It's very much more a traditional four-year college where you just go straight through. So there are issues like that that are affecting these small liberal arts colleges, Oberlin among them, you know, across the United States.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that. And I was reading through your article, and that was one of my big takeaways, too. You know, the fact that the tuition being what it is right now, and you also consider the alternatives that are out there for a lot of high school juniors and high school seniors. You hear a lot, too, about how trade schools are making a pitch to a lot of these kids, stating that, you know, you have options, you have alternatives, and right now there's a gigantic need in the trade world as well. So it's just a fascinating dilemma, and it's one that's certainly worth keeping an eye on moving forward.
And we will do that, definitely. Yeah.
Speaking of stories that are worth keeping an eye on, boy, a very bizarre story that you wrote on a lady who a couple of years ago was hit by a car and she was sitting in her own garage. So now she's suing the city. So the big question here is, why is she suing the city? But for those who haven't had a chance to read up on the story, can you kind of give us the backstory in all this?
Yeah, so this one was Dateline Sheffield Lake back in February of 2018. Beverly Potash was sitting in her garage, kind of minding her own business, when a car driven by Caitlin Kelling plowed through her front yard, through her driveway, and into her garage, pinning her up against a refrigerator that was in there, and she suffered a leg injury. Now, Mrs. Potash, and I hope I'm saying her last name correctly, her house is at the end of a T, so there's the street out in front of her house, but then if you were to walk out of her driveway and straight ahead off of her front lawn, there is a street coming that way, and a two-way street coming and going that exact way with a stop sign there. And she claims in her suit that half a dozen times in the past 13 years, cars have ended up either up against the garage, up against the vehicles in the driveway, or on her front lawn, because people blow through that stop sign. You know, either some of them might have been intoxicated, or some of them might have been sleepy, or they just weren't familiar with the neighborhood, driving a little too fast. Any number of reasons why that might happen. But she claims in her suit that her family had complained to the city of Sheffield Lake and said, look, this is happening consistently. You know, can you do something about it? And then she gets injured in this crash. Basically, Sheffield Lake at this time doesn't have a comment on it because they hadn't seen the lawsuit when we contacted them. But in the past, the mayor had basically said, look, this is not something. Dennis Spring had said basically, this is not something that happens all the time. We have a couple incidents where somebody ended up in the front lawn, okay, in their vehicle, you know, and somebody else bumped the cars where they were parked in the driveway. But flashing lights, you know, a speed bump, rocks, you know, extra trees in the right of way is not necessarily going to stop somebody who's passed out at the wheel. And that's why they don't see the stop sign. You know, some people who see the stop sign and just keep going, yeah, okay. But there wasn't a lot in a residential neighborhood that they said that they could do to prevent this kind of thing from occurring. Now it's kind of a sad situation because somebody got arrested and convicted and of a felony and a DUI, and Caitlin Kelling served her time, you know, going through recovery court, but she was intoxicated when this happened. So we'll see how it goes through the court system. You know, I don't know if there's been attempts to kind of resolve this issue, you know, outside of court, you know, in the past 2 years. But it's a situation that's really scary. I mean, imagine just sitting in your garage and all of a sudden there's a car that doesn't belong there that has pushed you up against, you know, an appliance. I mean, that's really horrifying.
Well, and Bull, but, I mean, you're a homeowner. I have been a homeowner. The first thing when you go look for homes, generally the first thing that comes up is location, correct? You find a home based on the location you like. So I find it odd that, you know, a resident chose a location right at the end of a street, and now it's the city's problem. What's your take?
Did you ask Bull or are you asking me?
I'm asking Bull. I don't think the city should have a take in this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking me.
No, you're good. No, I'm asking you, man. I mean, the lady chose that location, right? Some people choose the end of a roundabout or the end of a cul-de-sac. Some people choose, you know, way off the street versus close to the street. Unless this lady had lived there for, you know, 50 years and they built streets from the time that she moved there originally, she chose the location that she lives at.
Right, right. No, I understand that. She did. It's still, I mean, it's a risk that I guess you're willing to take when you purchase that property.
Sure.
For sure. I see what you're saying. It's still horrifying to think about that, though. The fact that you're in your garage and all of a sudden, bam, there's a car right there in your garage. Not something you're expecting, but to Steve's point, the possibility was certainly there, you'd like to think, when she purchased the property.
And I think, you know, and they've been there at least 13 years, and this allegedly has happened, you know, like I said, about, you know, I think it was 5 or 6 times that this had happened. And I think everybody deserves to be safe in their own home, and everybody wants to be safe in their own home. I don't think I'm going too much out on a limb to say that. There is, you know, there is the consideration that, like, you would want the city to take, to do its due diligence, you know, in order to prevent these kinds of things from happening. Also, you're thinking, hey, I'm in a residential neighborhood where the speed limit's 25 miles per hour. Myself living in a residential neighborhood, I know that people don't always go the speed limit. I'm not foolish enough to believe that they always do. You know, but that's one of those things where if this has been identified as a particular problem, you know, and you think, yeah, that stop sign's there, people are going to stop for it. Well, not everybody does. You know, I've seen people blow
stop signs.
But
what's weird
is
it's at a dead end.
Well, it's not a dead end. It's a T. See, you can turn right or you can turn left.
Well, right. So it's essentially a dead end as far as going straight is concerned.
As far as going straight on that street, yeah.
So the fact that anyone would continue going straight unless they're asleep at the wheel or intoxicated isn't very high, I would think.
Well, and there would be, you know, and in this situation there was obviously some impairment, you know, on behalf of the driver that did that. You know, and I think that, again, that kind of is to the city's point, you know, flashing lights aren't going to stop somebody who's passed out because they're drunk or drugged or high or whatever, no matter what the substance is. You know, that's not necessarily going to stop somebody. Yeah, some speed bumps or some, you know, some like some grating, you know, what's the stuff they put down, the, you know, the grindings and stuff like that
on the shoulders of like the highways and stuff.
That might wake somebody up, maybe. You know, and it's, you know, it's a situation I think is, you know, we'll see how it gets sorted out in court and whether or not it gets settled or taken in front of a jury. I mean, you know, we'll keep you posted, but I think all in all, it's just a really scary situation.
It is. And of course, you know, this kind of pops up a few days after that semi came off the side of the turnpike and came just a few feet away from smashing into somebody's garage. So just two interesting and very, very bizarre stories. All right, Dave, we've gotten to that point in the interview where we get to bring up scanner stories. You actually brought up a pretty good one last week that involved, well, a couple that was just out enjoying some KFC when they decided to take matters into their own hands in a good way. But you always come up with some great scanner stories for us. So what do you have this week?
Well, I'll try to do my best to top some of the past ones. And I'll give you a little dialogue here between a dispatcher and an officer. Dispatcher, yes, he said he struck the pole and he didn't know who to call for help, so he walked home. Officer responds, brilliant. Dispatcher, what should I advise him? Officer, advise him that I am towing his car. Unquote. So may that driver be advised that he'll have to go pick up his car somewhere else.
Good stuff. Well, Dave, as always, we appreciate the time. We know that you're recovering, still kind of under the weather, so we appreciate you stopping by and joining us, and we will do this again next week.
Well, I'd rather be out in that Arizona weather right now, let me tell you that. I'm looking out the window of the studio here, and it's just...
Yeah, Bull, I was going to send you a picture here once we get off of this segment here with Dave, but it has changed quite quickly out there. The grass is covered in snow, the roofs are covered in snow, my car is covered in snow. It's not like the large snowflakes. It's still just the small stuff, but it's coming, and it's coming quick. So
that was almost that was like a 30-second change.
Yeah,
The last time we talked, it was fine outside.
Yes, from when we had Tim Alcorn on just at the top of the hour to now the bottom of the hour, and the Cards have been covered for about at least 10 of those minutes, 15 of those minutes. So in 15 minutes, like always, the Cleveland weather, it changes.
Wow. Well, I'm going to soak up this Arizona sunshine. I'm due to land in about 25 hours, so I'm going to get all this I can while I'm here. All righty. Dave, thank you very much.